up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. There has been a serious military flare-up on the Israeli border with Syria. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israeli warplanes launched several waves of airstrikes inside Syria after an Iranian drone infiltrated Israeli territory on the disputed Golan Heights and was shot down. The Israeli army said a large-scale attack destroyed at least a dozen Syrian and Iranian targets in Syria. An Israeli F-16 fighter jet was also shot down and crashed inside Israel. The two pilots were injured and rushed to a hospital. The Israeli military described the drone infiltration as a severe violation of Israeli sovereignty and warned that Iran and Syria are playing with fire.
South Korea's Olympic outreach achieved a diplomatic breakthrough this Saturday when President Moon Jae-in was invited to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Pyongyang. A letter from Kim Jong-un articulating his willingness to improve inter-Korea relations was delivered to President Moon by Kim's sister, Kim Yo-jung, during a lunch for the North Korean Olympic delegation at South Korea's Presidential Blue House. U.S. President Donald Trump has blocked the release of a Democratic rebuttal to a Republican memo alleging FBI abuses of power during a probe into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. The president okayed the release of the Republican memo, which claims the FBI improperly obtained a warrant to spy on former Trump campaign advisor and also his connections to Russia. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. At the Winter Olympics in South Korea, sports fans flocked to the cross-country skiing center to see athletes compete and grab the first Olympic medals in the Pyeongchang Olympics. Two Americans were among the fans there.
Being at a medal event definitely adds to the excitement in the crowd. You can feed off of the athletes, and I'm sure that they can feel it in the air as well. But there's more at stake, and it just makes it a lot more exciting to watch.
Yeah, so we've seen some qualifying rounds, we've seen some practice rounds, and now we're really excited to come and see a medal round and see somebody, you know, win a gold medal.
The 2018 Winter Olympics officially began Friday when a parade of athletes, including athletes from North and South Korea, marched together behind a Korean unification flag. The UN Refugee Agency reports there's an upsurge in violence in battle-scarred Yemen and has sent more than 85,000 people fleeing for their lives in the past 10 weeks alone, adding to the already huge displacement that exists across the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA.
More than 2 million people have become internally displaced in Yemen since March 2015. That is when a Saudi-led coalition began a bombing campaign against Houthi rebels in support of Yemen's government. The UN Refugee Agency is alarmed by the recent escalation of fighting that has uprooted tens of thousands of civilians since December 1st. It says most of the new displacement is taking place in Yemen's west coast cities of Al Hudaydah and Taiz. UNHCR spokeswoman Cecile Puyi says there's particular concern about the welfare of civilians who remain close to hostilities in these areas.
Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA from the UNHCR headquarters in Geneva. The United States is ramping up pressure on regional and local Islamic State operatives and facilitators. It's part of an effort to shut down the terror group's global financial lifeline. The U.S. Treasury Department Friday announced sanctions against a series of individuals and companies from Somalia, Turkey, and the Philippines, describing the moves as part of a larger campaign targeting networks that help give the terror group access to money, weapons, and even drones. At least one of the individuals is already in custody. And Treasury officials also sanctioned two businessmen, one from Turkey and one from Somalia. Cameroon says its northern border with Nigeria and Chad are, and most of the Lake Chad Basin face a food crisis because of the desertification and the Boko Haram conflict that stopped farmers from doing their work. Thousands of school children selected from all primary and secondary schools plant trees on the outskirts of the capital of the northern region of Cameroon. And the Ministry of Secondary Education says the children were invited to plant trees there. Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The Electoral Commission is doing some form of monitoring. Apart from the Commission, other stakeholders are also helping in the monitoring process.
The Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission prepares to organize the upcoming March 7 polls.
Like the foreign minister said, Gambia, without Commonwealth, the voice of the Gambia was diminished. So it was also a cause for the country to join the Commonwealth, to revert back to the Commonwealth.
The heads of state and government from the Commonwealth of Nations accept the Gambians' application to rejoin the group.
All Cameroonians of good faith, good will, ready to keep our nation united, but to solve all the frustrations.
And the European Union calls on the Cameroonian government to initiate sincere and constructive dialogue to end the Anglophone crisis. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Sierra Leonean political parties and their candidates have stepped up campaigns ahead of the March 7 general election. The National Electoral Commission says it is monitoring all of the political party campaign activities to ensure they honor the code of conduct agreement they signed in the run-up to the polls. But some of the opposition parties expressed concern that supporters from the ruling All People's Congress, or APC, have been attacking opponents. But the APC denies the allegations. For more about plans to organize the vote, I reach Albert Masakoi, the spokesman for the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission in the capital, Freetown.
Official campaigns started on the 4th of February 2018, and since that time, Sierra Leone has been calm and quiet, but all of the political parties, of course, are enjoying themselves as they go about all over the country doing necessary campaigns. We are experiencing a quiet way of how they are doing their thing, but of course, maybe as the campaigns go on and on towards close to the elections, maybe the momentum will rise. But so far, so good. The first 1 week of the campaigns, almost, we are about completing it. Everything is quiet and calm, and all of the political parties, they are doing their campaigns quietly.
Is the Electoral Commission monitoring the campaign activities to ensure that they meet the requirement as they signed the code of conduct with the Electoral Commission?
Yes, indeed. The Electoral Commission is doing some form of monitoring. Apart from the Commission, other stakeholders are also helping in the monitoring process. You have the local observation outfit, new National Elections Watch. They're also doing some form of monitoring. And also other players like the Sierra Leone Police, in as much as they are providing security, they're also doing some form of monitoring. When we were doing the nomination of candidates for the various elective offices, they indeed signed what is referred to as a campaign code of ethics. So we are going to take all of these candidates, the political parties and the candidates, to task by monitoring what indeed they signed to uphold, and going by what they've said and moving towards the process, all of these other players, civil society, the security, observer groups, the EMBD, management, all of us are actually hand in glove together, showing that they abide by the rules that we've all put together with regards to the issue of campaigns.
When the APC presidential candidate filed papers for nomination, there were reported isolated cases of violence where a death or two were reported to have occurred. Some people are expressing concern that there could be violence in the run-up to the elections. How is the Electoral Commission working closely with security agencies to prevent any possible violence in the run-up to the elections?
Yes, the incident that you're referencing had to be like an eye-opener for every of the stakeholders to come together to ensure that we all work together in doing what we're supposed to do. It was unfortunate, the particular incident, but the electoral, the security, civil society, all of the other political players, we've all had a series of meetings to ensure that the various actors, the political parties, the candidates, refrain their supporters from engaging in any act of violence. We want to assure that such will not happen. That's the essence why we are doing a lot of monitoring. We ensure that every stakeholder, even the general public, the campaign schedules, the timetables have been published so that the general public are aware, the various parties that are out and about doing campaigns, wherever they are. But since the start of the campaigns, we are now 5 or 6 days into the campaign period, we have not had any incident of reported violence. We hope for the remaining days in the campaign calendar, we hope to have a violence-free campaign activities.
What punitive actions will the Electoral Commission or can the Electoral Commission take against a political party with its supporters engaging in violence? And two, what assurances are you giving prospective Sierra Leonean voters, or for that matter, the Sierra Leonean citizenry, that this election will be violence-free?
Well, in the first place, when political parties and candidates were going through the nomination process, they signed campaign code of ethics for them to abide by the rules of campaigns, the regulations of how to go about their activities. And the law makes provision for any contravention of these rules or regulations. There are penalties, and we have the judicial system that will ensure that anybody who falls foul of these rules and regulations, then it becomes a matter of a prosecution. But we want to ask the general public that even the political parties themselves, the candidates themselves, we've held series of meetings with them during our roundtable engagements at different levels, national, regional, district, constituency levels. They've given us the assurance that they would ensure they go about their campaigns. But in any case, if there's anybody who is going to default, then of course there's an issue for prosecution.
Albert Masakoye is the spokesman for the Sierra Leonean National Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from Freetown. Heads of state and government from the Commonwealth of Nations have unanimously accepted the Gambia's application to rejoin the group. All the 52 member states endorsed the Gambia's return to the Commonwealth Group of Nations. In 2013, former longtime President Yahya Jammeh withdrew the Gambia's membership, saying the country would not be part of any new colonial institution that represents an extension of colonialism. For reaction, I reached Gambian independent journalist Omar Wali in the capital, Banjul.
The Gambia was readmitted to the Commonwealth after 5 years of being away. You may remember in October 2013, the former president pulled out the country from the Commonwealth, saying it is a neo-colonial institution.
What was the rationale behind President Adama Barrow's decision to rejoin the Commonwealth Nations?
This was part of his campaign promises that if he wins, he will revert Gambia to the Commonwealth, he will restore rule of law. So these are part of his campaign promises, and he's fulfilling them one by one. And like the foreign minister said, Gambia without Commonwealth, the voice of the Gambia was diminished. So it was also a plus for the country to join the revert back to the Commonwealth.
So what benefits did President Adama Barrow say the Gambians will enjoy with this move to rejoin the Commonwealth?
Well, there are many things. This includes the recruitment of judges from the Commonwealth countries. You may remember that Gambia normally gets judges from the Commonwealth. And another thing is Commonwealth sports, games, sports in the Commonwealth. So Gambia will also participate in that one. Gambia also will regain the respect among the 54 countries of the Commonwealth and so many other things. So the benefits are many.
What are the expectations of the Gambians following the decision of the government in Banjul to rejoin the group?
The expectations are many. Gambians will enjoy the privileges the other Commonwealth countries are enjoying. They will also have their voice heard. Ministry, foreign minister said that Gambia's voice was diminished, and this reverting back to the Commonwealth will change. The expectations include climate change, the economic development, and the South-South cooperation, which are all vital to the development of that country.
We also understand some former military aides or security aides to former President Yahya Jammeh have been detained after they returned to the country.
Yes, this includes the former principal protection officer of the former president, General Umpamene, and Lieutenant General Ansumana Tamba. They left with the former president of Equatorial Guinea, but they came back to the country 1 year exactly, and when they arrived in the country, they were arrested. After the interrogation, they said that they had a very strained relationship, so they could not stay with the former president, Equatorial Guinea. That's why they are back in the Gambia.
So why are they being held? Are there any fears that they could be there to possibly overthrow the Adama Barrow presidency?
Well, according to the military spokesperson, they left the country and they are not disengaged with the military. That was a desertion. And they were with the former president, so they didn't know what they discussed or what were the plans for them to come and do whatever. So that's why they detained them for the meantime, try to investigate the motives of their coming back to the country.
I also understand there are suspicions that there are some elements in the military who still support the former president who was deposed.
Yes, that's right. That's why the military has been pushed back to the military barracks, and the police intervention unit, we call it in the Gambia, are in charge of the security, plus the economic, ECOWAS intervention force. Because Gambia, like you said, has been in power for 22 years, and he was in charge of the military, he pushed the military, and there are so many of them who are loyal to him, and it is not safe for them to be protecting the president. There can be anything. So that's why the ECOWAS came in, and the police intervention unit also is taking charge. So the military has been taken back to the barracks. Because ECOWAS, they have three mandates. One was just for Barrow to return back to the country, two, to ensure that the population of the Gambia is safe, and the third one is to ensure that, so look into the military and try to downsize it, and those who did not come through the right way will be removed from the military.
Omar Wale is an independent Gambian journalist who spoke with me from Banjul. The European Union has called on the Cameroonian government to initiate sincere and constructive dialogue as part of the effort to finding a solution to the Anglophone crisis. The group also expressed concern about the use of force by the state security forces. It followed local media reports which said security officers' indiscriminate use of force left four civilians dead in a recent security raid. But the government blames separatists for the deaths. Critics, however, say the administration is disinterested in any dialogue to end the Anglophone crisis. For reaction, I reach Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari in the capital, Yaoundé.
As far as the dialogue suggested by the European Union and all other Cameroonian friends is concerned, this dialogue is already taking place, and it will be intensified and inclusive dialogue. Let me raise this issue. We think that it is suitable, it is wise to sit round a table and to discuss with people who would like to amputate, to split the nation. In which area in the world have you ever seen such a thing to take place?
Well, I understand where your question is coming from. However, most people say that even when wars are going to end, it takes dialogue to end it. That is why a lot of people, including the clergy in Cameroon, have called also for dialogue. And some of them are saying that it appears the government of Paul Biya is displeased or doesn't have the political will to engage in dialogue with opponents.
To keep the nation united in peace, concord, and security is the first responsibility of the head of state. When there is trouble somewhere, believe me, this will become a nightmare for him and for all of us, to all of us, his collaborators. Dialogue is taking place, maybe not the way some of our brothers and sisters would have wished it to take place. But dialogue is on. The dialogue is on. And in case there is something new, a fresh proposal, a concrete proposal to raise, the head of state is ready to listen. In our capacity as his collaborator, we are ready to listen. All what can improve the situation will be wholeheartedly welcome.
So who are involved in this dialogue initiated by the government? Because all we hear is that those who are displeased with the government are saying there has to be dialogue to resolve this Anglophone crisis. The government says there's ongoing dialogue. So I'm confused. Who are involved in this dialogue, Mr. Chiroma?
All Cameroonians of good faith, good will, ready to keep our nation united, but to solve all the frustration. When our people say that we are frustrated, we are marginalized, we became a second zone citizen. The government keep always repeating the same thing, okay, come and meet the government with your grievance, and before coming, you have in your hand laws and constitution. All the problems should be addressed and settled within the framework of laws and constitution ruling the country.
So, Mr. Chiroma, under what constitutional provision are you holding these so-called separatists, and why is the government preventing their lawyers from having access to them?
We are a law-abiding nation. What all acts dealing with the arrest of the secessionists, all actions are taking place within the framework of rule and regulation, within the framework of our, how we call it in French, le code de procédure pénale, penal procedure code, okay? So don't worry. Right now, they are under investigation. And these investigations are taking place always within the framework of the law. The judiciary will never violate any aspect of its principles and the law that governs this part of this problem.
Issa Chiroma Bakare is the Cameroonian Information Minister. He spoke with me from Yaoundé.
No, my reaction is that I stand by our negotiating team in Addis Ababa.
The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, led by the former Affairs Vice President Riek Machar, says it has signed a declaration of principles for the peace revitalization process in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa. But the government refused to sign, saying it calls for sanctions on the parties. It came as the second phase of the South Sudan Peace Revitalization Forum commenced this week. Critics say the refusal to sign the Declaration of Principles for the Peace Revitalization Process is a demonstration of the government's lack of commitment to end the country's ongoing conflict. For reaction, I reached the South Sudanese presidential spokesman, Atteni Wek Atteni, in the capital, Juba.
No, my reaction is that I stand by our negotiating team in Addis Ababa, simply because they are authorized to sign anything that would bring peace to South Sudan. And if they don't sign, then it is for a reason. They cannot refuse to sign a document for no good reasons. Instead of signing something that would aggravate the situation, our team decided not to sign on that basis, and I stand on their side.
But Atei, do you think the decision not to sign this accord will be beneficial to the people of South Sudan? Because this conflict has been ongoing, and efforts are being made to try to resolve this conflict once and for all. So the failure, they said, of the government to sign it basically could worsen the situation on the ground.
No, but the truth of the matter is this. This is not the first time for the government of South Sudan to sign any agreement that is imposed in Addis Ababa. And the results of that agreement are always devastating. The 2015 agreement did not help the people of South Sudan, although it was signed on the basis of according help to the people of South Sudan, and became devastating simply because there were provisions that allowed for the two armies to be in Juba, and the fighting ensued as a result of that kind of bad provision, part of that agreement. Now, enough is enough. The government is not going to sign anything that will transfer war to Juba. It will sign something that will bring peace to the people of South Sudan. So if you look critically at this document that our team has refused to sign, it is on that basis. They don't want to sign anything that will harm the people of South Sudan.
If the government's duty is to protect life and property of South Sudanese, wouldn't the government do everything in its power to ensure that it carries out this constitutional mandate?
Now, the SPLM-IO in opposition is saying that the refusal of the government's team to sign this latest agreement shows that the government lacks political will and will put in danger the lives of South Sudanese. This is an abdication of duty of the president, Salva Kiir Mayardit.
The opposite in this case is true, the opposite, simply because how many IOs we should have? We have one IO that we signed with the agreement on resolution of conflict in the Republic of South Sudan on the 17th and 26th of August 2015, respectively. And after Dr. Riek Machar came to Juba, the issue of unknown gunmen increased because he was running almost a parallel government. If people talk about Riek Machar, then Riek Machar is non-status. We are not going to allow Riek Machar to come unless he comes only after renouncing violence and come back on 2020 or 2022, any time that the election would be held in South Sudan. This is where Riek Machar can come to do only political work. But to come with another army to Juba, this is non-status.
Now, so what is the next line of action for this government as talks continue? What are you going to do next now?
The next line of action is that we need the mediators to be realistic. They must be realistic, taking into account the situation in South Sudan. If they are not realistic, they will be creating SPLM-IO1, SPLM-IO2, SPLM-IO3, and 4 and 5. And this will be actually culminating into peace not coming to South Sudan. So being realistic, they should take into account which part of South Sudan, whatever IO that declared itself, would be actually, you know, claim to control. If you are not taking into account who control what in any negotiation, you will be negotiating with anybody at any time, even if those people are not relevant in the ground.
Atain Wekatain is the South Sudanese presidential spokesman. He spoke with me from Juba. Four Ugandan government officials have been suspended amid allegations of inflating refugee figures. The officials allegedly created fake news in refugee settlements, particularly in Western Uganda, to swindle money. Millions of dollars in aid are believed to have been lost as a result. Investigations will also consider whether officials from UN aid agencies were involved. My colleague Douglas Mpuga, Ray Charles Mwangui Mpaji, bureau chief for the East African newspaper in the Ugandan capital Kampala, and began by asking him how seriously the government was taking this investigation.
It is taking it very seriously because it risks denting Uganda's image as the most hospitable country for refugees, especially that last year the number of refugees from one country, South Sudan alone, was reported to have crossed the 1 million mark. By estimates, we are supposed to be having about 500,000 or half a million Congolese refugees. But if you add refugees from other countries like Rwanda, Burundi, some from Kenya who have never gone back since the 2007-2008 post-election violence there, refugees from Somalia and other countries, you find that Uganda has created space for itself at the top of the most refugee-friendly countries. Now, if there is evidence that there is fiddling with the numbers, government becomes very concerned not to soil its own otherwise good image.
Do these allegations cast some doubts on those figures? Because, as you say, Uganda is said to host a lot of refugees, welcoming more than any other country last year, mostly from South Sudan and DR Congo.
It definitely does. At the East African, we ran a story not long ago indicating that the number of refugees from Sudan had all of a sudden fallen below the 1 million mark. And we were wondering what the other extra numbers had gone or how they had melted, things that they had melted into the community. But we were told at the time that those numbers had not been captured on the biometric database that the United Nations High Commission for Refugees and the Office of the Prime Minister were using, that they had just been captured. So if you have talk that numbers could have been inflated, then obviously it casts doubts on very many government statistics to deal with refugees.
Given Uganda's reputation for its inability to investigate and prosecute corruption cases, do you think they will be able to thoroughly investigate this corruption scandal?
I think this is high profile. The is sluggish a little bit when it comes to purely domestic matters, but something like this that casts the spotlight on the country on an area it is very sensitive about, I believe that some serious action, both administrative and legal, will be taken.
The donors, Western governments who have been funding these refugees in Uganda, have expressed concern and even threatened to withhold funding to the Ugandan government. Do you think they are serious on this, or because we have seen other corruption scandals involving donor money that got lost, that went nowhere, do you think this time they are very serious?
Yes, I think you have to take them seriously. One is some of these donor countries haven't fulfilled previous pledges, especially at the International Refugee, made at the International Refugee Conference in Kampala last year, which sought to raise a significant amount of money that was never raised, even then. So if there is a scandal that emerges out of fiddling with the numbers as it appears now, definitely expect that donor countries will hold their money, and expect that they can only release it after after some work. But Douglas, I should inform you and your listeners that even as we speak today, I have just been looking at pictures of refugees on rickety wooden boats arriving at the landing site of Kanara in Ntoroko County from the Democratic Republic of Congo. So whether the numbers have been fiddled with or not, the fact remains that Uganda continues to host a very high number of refugees, given its location in a largely volatile region.
Charles Mwanguya Mpaji is the bureau chief for the East African newspaper. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, a Cameroonian separatist group has chosen an interim leader after Sisiku Ayuk Tabi, the leader, and 46 members were arrested and extradited to Cameroon. The government blames the Ambazonia secessionist movement for carrying out attacks against state security officers in several English-speaking areas of the country. Last week, the secessionist group issued an ultimatum to the Cameroonian government to produce their leaders live or face the consequences. For the latest development on the Anglophone crisis, I'm joined live in the studio by Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Separatist Movement. Hello, Chris.
Thank you.
Now, so who is your new leader, interim leader?
Well, before I get there, I'd like to correct an appellation that most media men are using. Ambazonians, the Southern Cameroonians, they're not separatists.
Well, the government says you are separatists.
That is what they say.
Well, we go with the government because they are recognized internationally.
We are also a government, and we give ourselves an appellation. We are the Republic, the Federal Republic of Ambazonia.
Well, that has not been recognized by the United Nations yet. But let me come to you. Now, I spoke with Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari.
Yes.
He's of the view that there are ongoing talks to end the crisis, and that your group, the Ambazonia group, seem not to like the way the dialogue is ongoing. What problems do you have with the dialogue, if any, is currently undergoing, and who is involved?
I wonder whether you asked him, since when did the dialogue start, and who did he invite to the table of the dialogue? Because we have not be invited for any dialogue. And so whoever he is dialoguing with, probably they are the only ones who know who they are dialoguing with. We have been talking about dialogue.
But instead of dialogue, yes, some of your folks are using violence. They attacked state security officers. At least four were killed last week.
Who is burning down villages? Not our people. Who is burning down whole towns? Not our people. Last night, during the day, people were rounded up in Bamenda and shot down. an elderly man in the bus traveling to the city of Bamenda, who wanted to go out and ease himself, was shot dead just because he told the officer, "Listen, I can't hold it anymore. My bladder is overloaded." And the police officer said to him, "If you try, I will shoot you down." And the man couldn't hold the bladder anymore. But when he tried, the police officer shot him down. He died right there.
Do you have evidence of that? Are you compiling that?
Oh, we absolutely do. We have video evidence. We have photo evidence of most of these developments.
Now, you spoke about an ultimatum. Your group issued an ultimatum to the government to either release or present them to the public, those who were abducted in Nigeria and extradited to Cameroon. What consequences will the government face?
Well, it's not something I will sit on radio and broadcast it. The government, I can assure you, they will hear from us, and they will hear from us in a very painful way, so long as our leaders remain incommunicado, cannot be seen, cannot be visited, not even by their own lawyers. Now understand, they have been abducted since January 5th. It's over a month, and nobody, not even a lawyer, not a family member, has talked to them or seen them. So we are giving La République du Cameroun that ultimatum remains on the table, and they're going to be taken by surprise. Let me assure you, they will be taken by surprise unless we see our leaders alive.
Are you talking about perpetuation of violence?
No, we have the right to defend ourselves, right? Of course, we do. So we have the right to say, "Mr., you know, this thing has been going on for a little over a year, and we have all along been patient. But in our patience, we have been pushed to the wall. You do not abduct people and hold them incommunicado, never to be seen for over, not in a civilized society."
But when charges of terrorism are leveled against you, you know very well that under such circumstances, those suspects are rarely given the regular rights under the Constitution, because you have taken arms against the illegitimately elected government. So you are stripped, literally, of those rights.
You're getting it wrong. We have not taken up any arms against any government.
So who killed those soldiers?
People are defending themselves.
Who are those people?
I think you should be asking who burned down villages, who burned down cities, who burned down
markets. The government blames Ambazonia groups for
what,
doing
what
so.
What proof do they have? Do they have video images? Do they have photos? We have proofs that they are doing that. I mean, you go on social media and you see photo evidence, video evidence of what the troops of La République du Cameroun are doing in our territory. And then they turn around. I mean, for a government that has mass graves that have been seen, photo evidence, and then they do all these things, turn around and call us terrorists. They are the terrorists.
No,
Chiroma knows that their government is a terrorist government.
Well, there are reports that Chadian troops have joined forces with security officers from Cameroon.
Correct.
To basically help the country maintain its territorial integrity, as well as try to suppress some of these violence.
Let me
finish my thought.
All right, go ahead.
Some of these attacks on the state security offices. Now, is your group prepared for such pushback from the government?
Where do they need Chadian soldiers, Chadian armies to defend themselves? That means they are not capable of defending themselves. We also learned they have French armies right now on the ground in Cameroon. Why do they need the French and the Chadians on the soil to defend themselves? Listen, when the moment comes, when the time comes, we will be able to defend ourselves. And they can bring in all of the African army into Cameroon. That will not deter us from defending ourselves. We know our terrain. We know our people. We are resolved. We are determined. Nothing will stop us unless they kill all the 8 million of us. Then we will give up then. But until then, nothing will deter us.
So whatever happened to your initial submission that you are being marginalized? Things have become so murky, nobody understands anything anymore. There's confusion, there's ongoing violence. and you are being resented, as I understand, by people, the majority of the people in Cameroon, the Anglophone, the Francophone side.
We have not used, we have not officially used the word marginalized. In fact, that word doesn't exist in our vocabulary as a government. What we have said is we have been colonized. Under the colonization, we have been basically assimilated and annihilated. Let me give you a little history, which a lot of people do not know. Up to today that we speak, the Southern Cameroons or Ambazonia has never been part of La République du Cameroun or French Cameroon.
Whatever happened to your constitution that called for federalism?
Let me get there. When you call for, you use the word call. And let me tell you, that constitution never existed. There has never been a treaty that says the Southern Cameroons and its French Cameroon came together and have a treaty, a union treaty that binds them together. It doesn't exist. And that is why we are saying to call us separatists, to call us secessionists. You only secede from something you belong to in the past, but we have never belonged. It was going to happen in 1961. But then there was never any treaty of union at the end of the day that bound the two territories together.
So what are the prospects of what you're seeking for at the moment? Because the president, Paul Biya, has said that Cameroon is one and indivisible, and the chances of succession or you going away or federalism or whatever it is, it's neither here nor there. The country will remain united, will remain Cameroon.
Where they have the right to believe and say what they say, we also have the right to believe in our ideology that because we have never been part of Cameroon.
What are your chances of having what you need or what you claim?
These are the chances. You must have already heard that the president of the United Nations General Assembly visited Mr. Biya in Cameroon with two maps, telling him Cameroon are two territories, the Southern Cameroons and the French Cameroon. So also, you have also to understand that according to United Nations provisions, every people's group have a right to self-determination, which is also what we are asking for. We are in Cameroon, we are two different cultures. We have two different educational systems.
So why now? No. Why now? You said this began a year ago when lawyers and teachers began protesting. You have been living in one country for all these years.
Yes.
Since 1960 or when you get independence. So why now?
Why now? Because as you said, Issa Tchiroma told you that he's been trying dialogue. Why now is because, remember, the present crisis first escalated in 2016, October 2016. Why? Because our courts, the courts, English courts in the Southern Cameroons were flooded with French magistrates, French prosecutors, French clerks, and our lawyers could not stand that.
But your country is a bilingual country.
I'm coming there, if I can finish the thought. Also, the teacher said, we realize that in our teachers, French teachers who could not speak a word in English, and you say it's a bilingual country, French teachers posted to English Cameroon who could not speak a word in English, sent there to teach maths, history, literature. So we realize you can't send teachers who cannot communicate in the language of the people to their courtrooms, to their school classrooms, to teach them, and the teacher said...
But that is neither here nor there, because if it's a bilingual country, hold on a second. If it's a bilingual country,
you're making,
the students...
You are making a mistake there.
Hold on.
Bilingualism doesn't mean that only one section practices bilingualism. In French Cameroon, there is nothing... you go to the University of Yaoundé, which is the most popular university or the oldest university in Cameroon. Anglophone, Southern Cameroon, Ambazonian students are taught 100% in French, and you have no choice and you cannot protest and you cannot say anything. But then they push them to the Southern Cameroons to teach French. Come on. It was meant to be two equal states in status, the state of the Southern Cameroon and the state of the French Cameroon. In fact, we had one flag with two stars. one star representing French Cameroon, the other representing the Southern Cameroon. We had a prime minister.
Whatever happened to all those? Now Cameroon only has one flag.
And that is what we are saying. We have been assimilated and annihilated because all these institutions no longer exist. We had a police force, Southern Cameroon police force. We had a prime minister. We had a national assembly. In fact, let me give you one point.
So why did you relinquish all that? Why did Southern Cameroonians stay for all those to be lost before you start fighting back for it?
We have been fighting for for about 56 years now. We have just only gathered this momentum.
Didn't your leaders sell you out, literally?
I wouldn't say they sold it out. I would say La République de Cameroun, Ahidjo, and the French were smarter. I put it that way. We were not sold out, but I would say the French and the Ahidjos were smarter. The British, who would have been there for us, abandoned us, and that's what we are calling back to them.
So what's the next line of action now? Before we go, what's the next line of action?
The next line of action is to see that we get to Boya. And our people who are all in jail are freed. And we are ready for dialogue. Let Issa Tchiroma not lie to you. He's a good liar and a very convincing one.
Well, you can't say he is a liar on the air like that.
Okay, but then, if he says dialogue is ongoing, who is he dialoguing with? We don't know. Maybe next time you ask him, who are you sitting on the dialogue table with and when did it start?
Well, he assured me that there's ongoing dialogue, but we'll continue with this discussion some other time. Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication for the Ambazonia Secessionist Movement, although he doesn't like it to be called so. He joined me live here in the studio in Washington, D.C. And right now it's time for music from African Collection.
Oi, this one na Sara Sara. The beat is tana tana. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. Oh yeah, make you ricotta ricotta mama Africa ricotta. Hey, make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody ricotta ricotta mama Africa ricotta. Hey, make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. This one na Sara Sara. The beat is tana tana. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. This is for people with chala cha. Hey. Wekalaka, ay, ya nandi walanya, ay, nandi kalanya. It go make you feel better. This can take away palaba. This can take away wahala. It go make you feel Naija. Oh yeah, let's go to Kenya, Rwanda and Tanzania. Togo, Cameroon, Niger, Ghana, South and Sudan. Oh yeah, make you ricotta, ricotta, mama Africa, ricotta, eh. Make you dance, yeah. Some easy make you no fight, oh. Hey, you go forget your sorrow. Makachuku, you go buy and play for your motto. Oh, hey, hey, this one na Sara Sara. The beat is tarantana. You go make you manya manya. Ines is in manya manya. This is for people we chalacha. Hey, people we kalaka. Hey, ya nandi walanya. Hey, nandi kalanya. It go make you feel better. This can take away palaba. This can take away wahala. It go make you feel Naija. Oh yeah, let's go to Zambia, Uganda, South Africa, Togo, Cameroon, Burundi, also Benin Republic. Hey. Oh yeah, make you ricotta, ricotta, mama Africa, ricotta, hey. Make you dance, yeah, 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 yeah. Everybody ricotta, ricotta, mama Africa, ricotta, hey. Make you dance, yeah.
Yeah.
my money, my body, now your own.
It's over your body.
If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Yeah. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh baby. No do, gotta for me. No do, say that, oh. My number one in tutu, sipping bruku tutu. For your love it tutu, I go chuku. Biko obianuju, say you do me juju. Cause I'm feeling the juju. Shake it to you, I wanna dash it to you. You can have it to you. You know I got this in you. I love you. There's nothing above you. Bridget, yeah. I like your mini skirt, yeah. Okay, you carry first, yeah. If I tell you, hey, I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh, baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Yeah. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh, baby. No do, I go chuku, biko obianuju, say you do me juju, cause I'm feeling the juju, and you know say nobody holy, but I don't go tell you story, I gotta be your man, let me talk to you, say a few things, girl I'm feeling you, but it's up to you, say you know I got this. I love you. There's nothing above you. Bridget, yeah. I like your mini skirt, yeah. Okay, you carry fancy, yeah. If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh baby. No do, gotta for me. No do, say that, oh. No do, shakara, oh, eh. No do, gotta for me, oh.
Your favorite boy, techno on the beat.
Mix Monster.
Keep that thing from me. Why you gon' do like that? Why you gon' act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Girl, come feed me, don't be stingy. Why you gon' do like that? No, baby, don't do like that. Oh, I want you to know. Say, I like the way you do. I know, sabi do the dance. But you just speak like with you. Go, 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 baby, you know. Say, you carry no be small. Shake it to the middle, shake it, get it, control. Girl, I like the way you, I like the way you dance for me. I like the way you bounce. Yeah, I like the way you bend like say you want to greet your mommy. You bend like say you want to park your money. Just bend like say you want to kneel for daddy. Just bend like say you don't send anybody. How you gonna do like that? Why you gonna keep that thing from me? Why you gonna do like that? Why you gonna act like you don't know? No, baby, don't do like that. Baby, don't tell me you don't know that you're beautiful. No, baby, don't do like that. I know you feel it in the bone inside your body. I know you need someone to hold somebody like. I know you want a piece of me, you want to say.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it is better to be a lion for a day than a sheep all your life. I'm your host, Peter Klote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early February, the United States imposed restrictions on the export of defense articles and defense services into South Sudan. The United States does not directly sell arms to South Sudan, but the ban will prevent any U.S. company or citizen from providing military equipment or defense services to the warring factions. Exports of weapons and ammunition into South Sudan undercut efforts to protect civilians, and prohibiting the sale or transfer of arms pressures the government of South Sudan and the armed opposition to implement the December 21st cessation of hostilities and start to end the trauma and displacement that millions of innocent South Sudanese have suffered. South Sudan gained its independence from Sudan in 2011. Peace lasted less than 18 months. In December 2013, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar erupted into civil war. The warring parties agreed to a peace accord in 2015 and to ceasefires on a number of occasions. All were broken before the ink was dry on the agreement. The continued fighting has cost the lives of thousands of people and led to a cutback in oil production, a devastated economy, human rights abuses, hunger, and malnutrition. The United States is appalled by the continuing violence in South Sudan that has created one of Africa's worst humanitarian crises, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a written statement. 1.5 million people are now on the brink of famine, despite enormous efforts by the United States and other donors since the conflict began in 2013 to stave off famine and save lives, she said. We urge all countries, including South Sudan's neighbors, to promote peace and save innocent lives by cutting off the flow of defense articles and defense services to South Sudan and to halt support to actors who are working to destabilize the country. We encourage the Intergovernmental Authority on Development and the African Union to consider sanctions measures against those who undermine the peace process. Additionally, the United States is seeking support for a UN Security Council embargo on all arms flows into South Sudan, and we urge all UN Security Council members to join us in supporting this action. The message must be clear. The United States, the region, and the international community will not stand idly by as innocent South Sudanese civilians are murdered.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From Washington.